Hello everybody and welcome to this week's Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM, the weekly programme for teachers, policymakers and anyone with an interest in teaching and learning. I'm Sean Delaney and you can download podcasts of previous programmes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. This week it is my great pleasure to introduce you to one of my colleagues in the Merino Institute of Education. Dr. Gerry O'Connell has been teaching religious education to future primary teachers since 2005, and before that he spent 25 years teaching primary school children at all class levels. His doctoral research centred on his work on preparing future teachers to teach religious education, and it focused on creating space for teacher candidates to do inner life work. I'll bring you my interview with Gerry over 2 weeks beginning today. Although the broad topic of our conversation is on religious education in a broad sense, we touch on many other areas, especially around the idea of teaching. Furthermore, Gerry does talk primarily about his own experience as a Catholic educator. I first asked Gerry to tell me the difference between teaching religion and religious education.
Teaching religion involves teaching a subject. Teaching religious education, as I see it, involves teaching students. Religious education should always be education. It always seeks to be holistic and always has liberation as its aim. That's the essential difference. It is something that irritates me faintly when people lump it all in as religion. If you're teaching religion, it's a different thing. The subject is your focus. If you're teaching religious education, the children are your focus. And I believe that in education, the students should always be the focus. That's where it starts.
So is part of the problem then that in the past, that wouldn't have been many people's experience of religious education? And is that what has maybe given religious education a bad name?
Undoubtedly, yeah. I think that the big issue with religious education has been the focus that people have had on content, the focus on doctrine, the focus on head knowledge as opposed to heart knowledge. And that in some way, what has always been done is we've tried to teach children what they need for 10 years' time and 20 years' time and 30 years' time. And that kind of education is just alienation. It has never worked.
So what does religious education then involve in primary and post-primary schools today?
In relation to primary, I can speak a little bit. In relation to post-primary, I would be reluctant to speak about that. It's not my area of expertise, even though I have supervised secondary school teachers writing their master's thesis and so on, so I have some kind of insider information. But I have a firm conviction that unless you're actually involved in the field itself, it's very difficult to speak with authority about it. I do know that in terms of primary schools, I taught religious education in primary schools for over 25 years, and my focus in primary school and the focus that I would advocate is always that the learning or the teaching and learning of religious education in primary school begins with the children's present experience. If it doesn't do that, it moves off into alienation again. It involves a movement, though, also from head to heart to hand. And that movement from working with whatever material is there to changing the way that people are in the world is the aim of education. It is, in the Levinasian sense, utterly ethical. It is about being for others.
How does the difference between religion and religious education differ according to the religious denomination of the school?
This question really interests me because, you know, there are some schools that teach religious education, some types of schools that teach religious education. There are types of schools that don't teach religious education, that teach ethics, and there are types of schools that teach religion. So, for example, in the Jewish school or in the Muslim schools, they teach religion. The teachers don't teach it. It would be the religious people would teach it. Now, I'm not sure about the Jewish school, but in the Muslim schools, it is somebody appointed by the imam who teaches religion, and it is religion that they teach. In Church of Ireland, Methodist and Presbyterian schools, when they follow the Follow Me program, it is very much a religion program. It is based on the Alive O, but it's adapted and changed to make it like the rest of the primary school curriculum, and it is about head knowledge. So I would call that religion. In some sense then, because Educate Together schools don't teach religious education, even though they called it that at one stage, but they've gone back to ethics now. And Community National schools have decided not to teach religious education, but to go the ethics road as well. In some sense, religious education is only being taught in Catholic schools. And is everything that's being taught in Catholic schools in the name of religious education actually religious education? Or is some of what's being taught in Catholic schools religion? It's supposed to be religious education. And religious education, as I've said already, has as its aim the flourishing of the child. It has as its aim human freedom. In a Catholic school, it follows what Dermot Lane calls the Nazareth Manifesto, where Jesus went into the synagogue in Nazareth. He unrolled the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, and he quoted from it, and he said it referred to himself. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He sent me to bring good news to the poor, liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, freedom to those in prison, and to proclaim a year of Jubilee. And I'm paraphrasing and leaving bits of it out there. But in terms of the Catholic school and in terms of religious education, that manifesto is very important. What is it that oppresses the children and how do you liberate them from it? What is it that imprisons them? In primary school, it goes without saying that any child who doesn't come out of primary school literate is imprisoned for life. And that somehow or other that has to be a priority for every lesson in the Catholic school that children would learn how to read, including in religious education. But there's also the question of how the children are and how the teacher is with the children. And that last line in the Nazareth Manifesto, to proclaim a year of Jubilee. In the Jewish tradition, the year of Jubilee was every seventh year, where all debts were cancelled. And I often say to my students here, you know, when you go into school and you have a bad day with certain children or whatever, let that go when you go out in the evening. When you go in the next day, don't have spent the whole night thinking, how are you going to fix that child today? Let it go. Start on a new day. And that religious education in some way gives you a space to do that, to be with the children where they're not under pressure of getting this right and getting that right and so on, but where they can just be and the teacher can connect with them.
But when you say there that it's all about starting with the children's experience, if you think of a class today, probably more so than any time in the past, the children's experiences are probably more diverse than ever before. Does that make religious education more challenging for a teacher?
Absolutely, but at the same time, it's what gives it the variety and life that it has. And it is one of the reasons why a religious education lesson must be a slowed down time, where the children's variety of experience is valued and where there's space for them to work with it. And again, if you spend your whole time focusing on the content rather than on the children, that never happens. Their varieties of experience are just simply ignored. There is a new development from a methodology known as godly play that has surfaced in recent years called deep talk, which I would strongly advocate at the moment. It's a methodology around stories where children get to work with their experience in non-threatening ways. And for any teacher who is looking for ways into that, being present to the children and their experience, I would recommend such an approach.
So if the starting point is the children's experience, where do you go from there? Where do you want to bring the children to, or do you want to bring them to somewhere specific?
Yes, you do. You do. And I think the interesting thing, Sean, is that the children's experience has been the starting point for religious education in Irish Catholic schools since about 1972. Whether that has happened in the classroom or not is something that would be open to judgment to your listeners, any of them that have been in school since 1972. But in 1972, Bishop Bill Murphy retired from Kerry, who's probably out walking the McGillicuddy Reeks as we speak. He did his doctoral thesis on the anthropological approach, which involved a religious education methodology or approach from Gabriel Moran that began with the children's experience. It was specifically Christian in approach. It began with the children's experience. It moved from there into stories about Jesus and stories that Jesus told, and from there into a reflection on that, with the aim that children would have guidelines for their lives in Christian schools. So ultimately, the aim of religious education is about liberation. It's about freeing children from what oppresses them, but also giving them a vision for a life well lived.
So when you talk about what oppresses them, what kind of things are you thinking of?
In the current age and the current day, I find my own students, who are my current experience, if you like, in education, I find them utterly oppressed by social media. They live in this strange, pressurized, virtual world where everything they do is being judged and broadcast and put out there. And they have very little space in which to live a free life. And I find that nobody speaks of it. They don't see it as this insidious thing that affects how they are in the world, and that there is a great need for them to have time apart from that. But that might be me, the dinosaur, with my reluctance to engage in such matters.
And it can be such an unforgiving medium, and it can be so polarizing.
I suppose the perfect example and the trite example of it, if you like, is in anyone who does distance running now. It's absolutely inhabited by Facebook. And that you have the ridiculous situations where you have members of running clubs who won't turn up at a race because other members of their own club might beat them, and there might be something on Facebook about it. And I find it tragic that a hobby, a pastime, could be decided by what happens on social media afterwards.
So what then, if we get back to the classroom, what is a typical religious education lesson like?
If I ask my students here in Marino who've been through religious education at two levels, what a typical religious education lesson is like, they'll have one answer. If I ask teachers in the classroom, they'll have another. So there are two questions here. One is what is it like? And number two, what should it be like? So my students often say, well, it was about song singing and colouring in and keeping a copy and filling in workbooks. But we know that in all of our subjects here, that their experience of it and what it should be like are two entirely different things. I have tried to advocate that a religious education lesson would have three elements: contemplative space, depth of conversation or wonder, and symbol or story. A lesson can vary in all kinds of ways, but these elements, contemplation, depth, and symbol, should be part of it, I believe. I also would advocate such an approach so that teachers, when they look at the lesson that they plan to teach, would ensure that those three elements are in some way part of it.
So could you give me a concrete example of that in relation to any topic at all that you choose, of going into the contemplation, the depth, and the symbol that might accompany it?
Well, I suppose the perfect example that comes to mind here is in the new religious education program in Catholic schools, Grow in Love. The first lesson in the senior infants program is a lesson about a little boy who's going back to school after the summer into senior infants. And he's gone to miss his mammy because he's had her all summer and he's feeling really sad. His mammy knows that. So she wants to do something about it. Okay, so the lesson begins with this story, and the children understand that feeling. They all understand what that means. So Mammy, to continue the story, Mammy bends down and picks up a stone out of the garden, a little round stone, and she hands it to the little boy. And she says, I want you to put that stone in your pocket. Any time that you're feeling lonely for me, you put your hand into your pocket, and when you feel that stone, you will know that your mammy loves you. suddenly we've moved into symbol. The children in the class at this stage may have a stone of their own that they choose to remember, or whatever it is, but we're working with symbol at the age of five, and they all understand it. And Rebecca Nye says that children of 5 years of age understand symbol far better than story. We tend to think the opposite. We tend to think you have to be an adult to get what symbol is about. And from there, it moves with the children into a contemplation where they bring their loved ones to mind and they breathe and they dwell in the moment and they pray. So all three elements, if you like, of the contemplative space of depth, of wonder and conversation and symbol or story are in this lesson.
And the religious connection then there, is that the prayer or is there more?
In the new program in Catholic schools, which broadly follows shared Christian praxis approach, that lesson would occupy day one. And day one is about let's look. It's called Let's Look, that section. And it stays utterly, really, with the children's experience. But again, it's up to the teacher to fashion where that's coming from. It will move later on in the week into more overtly religious stuff, if you like, that can connect with that.
And how important is the teaching of sacraments to religious education in schools?
The teaching of sacraments has been a vexed question. I do remember myself teaching the sacraments. I was teaching First Communion in 1981, and I was teaching it again 2005. So I have some experience of this. And confirmation, reconciliation, Eucharist, probably 15 times over the course of the 25 years. I was involved in one or other sacrament, whichever. And every year, when it would be over, I would say, this will be different next year. And it would rarely be different. There is something about the sacraments from a teaching point of view that is deeply unsatisfying. The teacher always wants to make meaning, and it becomes some kind of a cultural event outside of the control of the teacher. So the question has arisen, as you know, in the last number of years about moving the teaching of sacraments into the parish. The question then becomes, will it be teaching? I have a deep conviction that if you want somebody to work with children, you need a teacher. This conviction, again, by way of a trite example. I coached the senior Gaelic football team for one of the schools that I was in. And even though we only had 1 6th class, and in the final we were playing against a school with 5 6th classes, we won. The following year, I lost that position as coach of the senior Gaelic football team, and two experts were taken in, an Irish international soccer player and another guy who had coached senior Gaelic football champions in 4 counties and played for Leinster. They came in and they had balls and hoops and ladders and bibs and all kinds of marvellous equipment. And even though they had 11 of my team from the year before, they were relegated. Now, apart from the smugness that it granted me, it had nothing to do with my ability as a Gaelic football coach, and had everything to do with my ability as a teacher to know the children. If you want children taught, you need a teacher. I have a brother who's a panel beater. I would not recommend that if anybody needs a dentist, they go to him. But we have often, in terms of teaching, imagined that anybody can do it, and they can't. And people who work in parishes with a heart and a half, if they are not teachers, they will not teach.
But what is it makes a teacher? Because just because somebody has the label teacher doesn't make them a teacher.
Oh, if we had the answer to that question where we work in teacher education, that would be the thing. Teaching is a vocation. It is just a vocation every bit as much as Wordsworth felt on his way home that morning when he composed the prelude, where he looked up at the dawn in the Lake District and he wrote to his friend and fellow poet Coleridge, "Ah, dear friend," he said, "ah, dear friend, I made not vows, but vows were made for me, And he gave up all of the other things that he was going to do in his life and became a poet. The teacher does that. And we have seen it so often. We've seen where students have gone away and become barristers and become engineers and had PhDs. And the teaching was burning them, so they came back to get into that. It is a call. Ireland is an amazing country for teachers. We still draw our teachers from the top quatrain. We must be the only country in the world doing that, primary school teachers. We treat them very badly, I believe, in official ways anyway, our lack of trust around their genius and so on. But it is just amazing how in Ireland, the work of teacher, I think the only country where I could compare it to would be Outer Mongolia, where the greatest compliment you can pay to anybody is to call them teacher.
Okay, but the call is one thing. How do you move from having the call? Because just because you get the call doesn't make you that teacher. What is it about how you respond to the call that turns you into the kind of teacher you want who can inspire learners?
That is the question, without a doubt. I think that if the call is strong, then the motivation is there. Which means that when teachers get the opportunity in their training, in their continued professional development, in their reading and whatever it is, to develop their skills and talents, then they take that, they engage with it. We have seen here over years in Marino how seriously our students take the question of school placement and this gift that they have to be able to go in for a few weeks into school while they're training to teach the children. The resources they prepare, the staying up half the night to get ready and so on. They are hugely driven. But they also need the kind of expertises in the different subjects of the primary school that will make them good teachers. And there's no teacher I know that doesn't do that, that doesn't try to do that. Not every teacher is an expert with every subject, but you would hope that over the course of the primary school years, that children would have a range of teachers that will in some way nourish them in all of the different elements that they teach. I do believe, however, that a teacher's enthusiasm is their gift to the children. And I was very surprised a number of years ago where I met a past student of mine who I had taught in senior infants. And he told me he was finishing up a master's in music in Maynooth. Now, as both a teacher and even to this day, I am musically illiterate. I loved singing with the children, but I could not sing in tune. And I said to him, and what gave you your interest in music? And he just pointed at me. He said, you used to sing all day in senior infants. And it was a real eye-opening moment for me that even in a subject where I was horrifically weak, that it could inspire a student in their life choice.
If we move away from the teacher for a moment, what role do parents play in supporting schools in providing religious education for students?
It's very interesting to me in the current debate around religious education in schools. I have never heard of a case where a parent who was a member of the Flat Earth Society had their child removed from the teaching of geography because they didn't agree with the approach in school. Perhaps, though, the science as opposed to creationism in the States is an example of that. What role do parents play? I'm tempted to say the same role as they play with other subjects, but it has become something different. So if parents don't want their children to have religious education in schools, then they withdraw them from the class. I'm not sure whether the children get a vote in that or not. I know that Norman Richardson in Stranmillis has written a very interesting piece about how would we make our religious education so interesting that people would want to opt in rather than opt out. There is a huge question, undoubtedly, in Irish schools of every type. In school, Irish schools of every type, there are people who don't want their children exposed to religion or religions or religious education. That is a question that is going to run and run. What can the teacher do in terms of encouraging parents to support the teaching of religious education? And that one's very simple. Have that dialogue. Find out where it is that the parents stand, what they wish for their children and so on, and seek to address that question. Because even in classrooms where parents don't want their children engaging with religious education, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want them nourished spiritually. So how do teachers go about doing that? And is there the possibility in schools, for example, where maybe you have a Catholic school with a huge number of children who are non-Catholic and who don't do religious education, is there a case there for team teaching? Is there a case there for differentiation? Of course, in religious education in the last number of years, differentiation has been termed segregation. I've never heard anyone talking about segregation in maths or in literacy, but I've heard it called that in religious education. It's a terribly pejorative term, really. An example, I suppose, in the media of personal agendas getting involved in this area.
And what agendas are they? Is it a secularisation agenda?
I wouldn't call it secularisation. I would call it aggressive secularist. There's nothing wrong with a secular agenda. A secularist agenda is a different thing, because that means that you want to remove one ideology and replace it with another. And you're doing it in a way that is underhand. There would appear to be an aggressive secularist agenda at play around the area of religious education. And it manifests itself primarily in the media, in certain parts of the media, and I probably shouldn't generalize in any way, and I wouldn't like to, but I have noticed that when the national broadcaster, for example, have anyone commentating on rugby or Gaelic games, they always have people with expertise. If they're commenting on religions or religious education, it seems that anybody will do. I could say the same about distance running at times too, but lately they've improved with that at least.
And that was Gerry O'Connell commenting on two of his interests, religious education and long distance running, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. I'll bring you more from my interview with Gerry on next week's programme. To download over 300 Inside Education podcasts, go to seandelaney.com and click on the podcasts tab. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good online bookshops and libraries. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.